are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. It is a Twitter Tuesday, and you are with Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. You can follow all my work at my Twitter account, which is at Patricia_Traina. I have a whole list of articles and whatnot that I post daily, so make sure you are following me. And don't forget, if you want to drop me a line, ask me a question, drop a comment, that's the place to do so. So as I mentioned, we have a Twitter Tuesday on deck. We're going to devote the entire show to answering your questions. Before I get into your questions, however, do want to give you an overview of what's coming up the rest of the week. On Wednesday, Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears will be joining me, and we'll be doing the crossover show, so that should be a lot of fun. On Thursday, Bob Glauber, the columnist who's been doing this for a long time, will be joining me on the program. Bob is going to talk some Giants with me, offer some perspectives, and also talk about his new book that just came out. And it's a book that I think a lot of Giant fans, or football fans in general, are going to really enjoy if they are able to get their hands on it. It's a book called Guts and Genius, the story of three unlikely coaches who came to dominate the NFL in the 1980s. Okay, so as promised, we're going to do Twitter Tuesday, and let's jump right into your questions, all right? So I'm going to start off with one received via our email account, which is lockedongiantspodcast@gmail.com. This one is from Ben L. Ben actually has two questions he wants to know. The first is, do you think it's possible that the Giants were almost wanting to lose the game against the Eagles in order to help draft position? And his second question has to do with Geno Smith getting on the field against the Chargers. Will that help with a comp pick? Okay, Ben, I'll take your first question. I've said this before, and I'll say it, you know, again here. Any team that tanks on purpose for whatever the reason, to help their draft pick, to help an opponent, whatever, they should just be tossed out of the league. So, I mean, look, why go through the whole week of preparation? Why put yourself through the physical rigors, the mental rigors, just to lose the game? I mean, that's just, this whole notion of tanking is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm just really surprised that people think that that's a possibility. The Giants were in the playoff hunt. You know, that's their ultimate goal. And unfortunately, they didn't get it done against the Eagles. They set themselves back. And as a result now, they have it, you know, they're still mathematically in it, but they have a long way to get to the playoffs. They're going to need a lot of help if they are to even have a shot at making the playoffs. So, no, the Giants didn't tank for the sake of, you know, improving their draft spot. That's just, that's a crazy idea. No offense, but it just doesn't, no. All right, regarding Geno Smith getting on the field, I did ask Nick Corte of Over the Cap about that, and long story short, the answer is no. Him getting on the field with the Chargers in relief of Phillip Rivers, not necessarily an indicator that he's going to bring the Giants a compensatory draft pick. There's still other factors in play. You know, Nick didn't get into the details. And again, you know, as I've said on other shows, I'm not familiar with what the formula is. I know Nick is very familiar with it, does a great job of projecting that. So I don't know what elements are necessary for the Giants to get a comp pick, but I don't think, at least from what I remember Nick saying to me in response to a question, is I don't think the Giants are going to get that compensatory pick for Geno Smith at this time. So thanks for writing in and for the questions, and hope to hear from you again soon. Okay, so let's go and take a look. I'm going over to my Twitter account here, and let's see what we have from our from my listeners, okay? Rich wants to know, who do you think is more to blame for the second half failures, the defensive players or the defensive coaching? I'm assuming you mean the second half failures of the Giants-Eagle game. Combination, probably. I would say maybe more so on the players. But, you know, you win as a team and you lose as a team. And the reason why I think I'm more inclined to say that the players are more at fault is because if you look at the tape, you see guys who aren't getting off their blocks. You see missed tackles. You see bad angles. That's all on the players. Now, with that said, the coaches have to put the players in the best position to make plays. And I'm not so sure that the Giants do that on a regular basis. Now, whether that's because they don't have all the players they need in order to make this work, or, you know, some other reason, I just think there's enough blame to go around for that collapse against the Eagles. You know, a very disappointing collapse. They had them 19-3, and for them to just come up short the way they did was just inexcusable. So thank you for that question. Up next, Alex M. has a two-part question. Wants to know about, let's see, Odell Beckham goes in for hydration IVs a lot. Is there a better way to manage so that he doesn't disappear and miss drives? And second, does the head coach take advice on the sideline to keep him in check regarding a game plan? Your first question regarding Odell, really the only way to solve that problem is to stay hydrated. You know, whether you're drinking water, Gatorade, whatever the issue, you know, whatever you like, he has to drink something. And I know a few weeks ago, Odell said he wasn't a big fan of water. I know I don't blame him for that. I'm not a big fan of water either. I have to flavor my water in order to, you know, meet the the recommended 8 cups a day that most health professionals recommend. But, you know, sometimes, though, when you're in the moment of a competition or you get really busy, you just forget to do the little things, you know. So maybe Odell just doesn't remember to do it or thinks he's okay, and then boom, he gets hit with dehydration issues. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if I can, you know, compare this to something I do, and I really shouldn't, sometimes when I'm writing, I forget to stand up every so often and move around. And what ends up happening is I end up sitting for long periods of time, which, you know, as we all know, is not the best thing in the world for a person to do. So I can kind of understand where you know, Odell would be coming with that. But, you know, you got to stay hydrated, especially when it's warm out there and you're moving around. Because if you're losing fluids and you don't stay hydrated, you're going to have problems. Regarding your second question about Shurmur and does he take advice on the sideline to keep him in check, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. I mean, advice from maybe his assistant coaches. I'm sure they do radio down or tell him what they're seeing, but ultimately the decisions are Shurmur's. He is the head coach. He is responsible for how the game is managed, what plays are called. He has the right to overrule his assistant coaches if need be. So I don't think, if you're asking me, is there a check and balance type of situation on the sideline? My answer is probably not. So thanks for the questions. Let's see. Steve H. wants to know, any chance Eli comes back next year at a much lower salary? My guess is no. If you're talking a straight pay cut, I don't see it happening. If you are talking a restructure to where maybe they take his base salary and lower it and convert some of that money to, you know, a signing bonus, I could see that possibly happening. But, you know, at some point, the Giants will need to move on from Eli Manning. And just as an FYI, I do have an article coming out on Forbes, I believe it's going to be later this week, in which I explore the scenarios and how the Giants could potentially transition from the Eli Manning era. So keep an eye on my Twitter account. I will tweet out that link when that article is posted. And thank you, Steve, for that question. New York Sports wants to know, do you think Olivier Vernon gets released or traded in the offseason? I don't think he's going to get traded. I mean, that contract makes it kind of hard to trade him. you'd have to trade him to a team that has a lot of cap space. And I just don't know that there are a lot of teams out there that are going to want to take on that contract, especially given his, you know, production over the last couple of years and his injury history. I do think there is a possibility he could be a salary cap casualty if he does not restructure. Again, you know, injuries are not a person's fault, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, Olivier Vernon's had the last 2 years with an ankle injury that has hampered his production. And, you know, at some point, I got to imagine that Dave Gettleman, the general manager, is going to come to him and say, hey, listen, man, you know, we got to do something about your contract. We need you to help out this team, you know, in another way. And, you know, maybe they restructure him to where he can earn back any money that he might have to give back. Or, you know, I don't know. I haven't really looked at those numbers. I will at some point and maybe come up with a plan for that. But right now I would say of the two scenarios you have posted, release, you know, him getting released is probably the more likely scenario if he does not agree to a restructure or a pay cut. John F. wants to know, let's see, what can the Giants do to give us confidence that the coaching and management pieces are at least in place for the future? I still believe in Shurmur, but I'm wavering a bit. Really, I mean, at this point, John, you just look at the young guys, the young players. Are they trending upwards? You know, you look at guys like Lorenzo Carter, who started off with a handful of snaps and has been gradually earning more snaps and playing well. You look at the Grant Haleys and the Sean Chandlers and look at how they've been growing and developing. And really, you know, it's kind of funny. I was saying to someone just the other day, a lot of fans don't like the preseason. They don't like to watch the lesser known guys, the young guys, because they don't feel it's the same quality of football. Well, guess what, guys? When you're not in the playoff hunt or you're tinkering on the bridge of being eliminated, you're going to see the young guys at some point. And I think, John, to answer your question, you do want to pay attention to the young guys, see how they fare, and just see, you know, get an idea of where there may be strengths and where there are weaknesses on the roster. Because if you do that, you can pretty much anticipate what moves the Giants might make in the offseason. So you're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina. We are on a Twitter Tuesday, so we're going to take a short break, hear from a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more of your questions. So stay with us. The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NFL Net to get all the latest breaking news and game highlights from the Locked On Podcast Network NFL hosts, all on one convenient feed. On Instagram, Locked On NFL Net gives you the biggest stories, including audio cuts as provided by the various Locked On NFL team hosts. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL Net on both Twitter and Instagram to get your daily fill of the NFL. Hey, Giant fans. With the temperatures dropping in parts of the country, it's important to stay warm, especially if you're partaking in outdoor activities. And if you've been looking for an apparel line that keeps you warm and toasty in the frigid temperatures, you got to check out Action Heat, makers of the world's best battery-heated clothing. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge, and which can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Action Heat's clothing line is great for anyone who works outdoors, who skis or is a snowboarder, joggers, or anyone who loves the outdoors but hates being cold. Action Heat offers heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments such as heated base layer shirts and long johns, available for both men and women with several styles to choose from. And now, listeners to the Locked On Giants podcast can save 20% off their entire order at actionheat.com when they enter the coupon code Locked On. Stay toasty warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. Visit actionheat.com and remember to enter your special promo code Locked On, that's all one word,
to save your 20% discount on your entire order.
Welcome back, Giant fans. You're with Patricia Traina on a Twitter Tuesday. And as usual, you guys did not disappoint with your questions. A lot of good ones. And I'm trying to get to as many as I can on today's show. If I don't get to your question, I may just throw on a segment later on in the week to get to the rest of the questions, because I do believe in trying to answer as many of the questions that I receive. You know, you guys took the time to write, so I'm going to take the time to respond as best as I can. Okay, continuing with your questions, David L. wants to know, any idea why Coach Shermer's play calling is so suspect when it's supposed to be his strength as an OC in Minnesota? David, the only response or the only logical answer I can give you is that when you are an offensive coordinator, the head coach has the right to overrule you when it comes to calls that are made or aren't made. When you have a head coach who is his own play caller, you don't have that system of checks and balances. In other words, what the head coach calls for is pretty much what he goes with. So, you know, there are some guys that are that make excellent offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators, but when they are given an opportunity to be a head coach, totally different scenario, totally different vibe that they give off. Too early right now, I think, to say for sure where Shermer's going to fall into that, because again, I'm not sure all along he's had you know, the pieces that he needed. I don't think he has all the pieces he needs on offense, but hopefully they're trending in the right direction and he does get them. So I would say give him another year and let's see if maybe they can turn things around. The offense has played better. You know, the play calling against Philly was a head scratcher. I know he tried to explain it. I don't agree with, you know, some of the things he said and some of the things he did, but he gets paid a heck of a lot more money than I do. And, you know, people are going to listen to him faster than I guess they'll listen to me. So thank you for that question. Big Blue 75 wants to know, when do we see Kyle Lauletta? I'm still sticking with what I've been saying all along. We will not see Lauletta until December. My guess is the last, maybe I'm saying 3 or 4 games, you might see him pop in, you know, for an opportunity here or there, if the situation allows for it. You won't see Lauletta before that, because basically if they pull Eli Manning now and they put Lauletta in, they're basically saying to the locker room, look, we're throwing up the white flag here. We're giving up and we're looking towards next year. And I think so long as the Giants are in the playoff hunt, and again, they are still mathematically in it, you will not see Kyle Lauletta for a while yet. I think if anything, we might see Alex Tanny. I know Shermer's been touting Alex Tanny. He's been talking about him today. So there's a chance we might see him before we see Lauletta. So sit tight. I do think at some point we will see him, but it will not be until maybe the last 2 or 3 games of the season. Let's see. Next question comes from King23. How much blame does Mara get for the past few years? You win as a team, you lose as a team. And I think the one thing that John Mara is guilty of, which it happens to be something that is also admirable when it comes to him, and that is he gives his people the opportunity to succeed or fail. He's very hands-off. And sometimes, you know, in his loyalty and his belief in people, he tends to stick with them for far too long for the sake of creating stability. That was the case with Jerry Reese and Mark Ross, and it absolutely cost the Giants an opportunity to, you know, to come out of a hole. And if you think back to, I think it was 2013 or 2014, at his year-end press conference, John Mara acknowledged that he knew that the Giants roster at the time wasn't very good. And he said, look, it's up to Jerry to fix it. So he basically gave Jerry Reese another opportunity to fix some of the mistakes that he had made along the way. And when Jerry wasn't able to do that, you know, it was over. I mean, they moved on from Reese. They moved on from McAdoo. They moved on from Mark Ross. And now they're trying to, you know, start all over and fix years and years of poor personnel decisions. So, you know, to recap, Mara is guilty of having faith in people and trying to let them do their jobs and prove him right. So if you want to give him blame for that, that's up to you. You know, it's an admirable quality, but it's also, you know, not one that has helped the team, I guess, in the last several years. So thanks for that question. Vince B wants to know, Handley, McAdoo, Shermer, who is worst? Oh, gosh. I wouldn't put Shermer in that group. Shermer's only been on the job for one season with the Giants. Can we give the guy a chance, you know, to get a better roster, you know, for Dave Gettleman to fix some of the, you know, like I said, the years and years of bad personnel decisions and bad drafts that have sunk this team. So I just, you know, I wouldn't put Shermer in that group. Ray Handley, I did not cover the team back then, so I couldn't really comment about how he was with the media. I mean, I only know what I read back then. I did cover Ben McAdoo. Never really had a problem personally with McAdoo. But, you know, I think it was pretty obvious that with him, he didn't know how to, you know, handle people. He was uncomfortable with people. So, you know, if you're talking about who's worse in terms of, you know, being a head coach, I guess you can let the records speak for themselves. But for the most part, you know, I that's a tough question for me to answer. So, all right. Coach wants to know, how many more times do we have to hear Shermer say in the post game we should have done something different with the schematics or regarding personnel? Why don't they just do it in the first place? Coach, you're always going to second guess yourself. You know, no matter what you do in life, there are going to be times when you second guess yourself, you know, whether it be calling plays, whether it be making decisions, you know, should I go with the red tie or the blue tie? Should I open the article with this story or that story? I mean, it's just part of life. You know, it's better to admit that you could have done something differently or made a mistake than to sit there and be stubborn about it and say, hey, listen, this is what I've done and I'm sticking by it. And, you know, even though you end up making a bad situation worse. So I think, you know, for what it's worth, it's not a big deal that he gets up there and says, you know, that it's something different that they should have done. I mean, I'd rather he do that than say nothing at all. So you're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina. It is a Twitter Tuesday. We're going to take our final break, come back and answer some more of your questions. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to segment 3 of Twitter Tuesday. Your questions, great questions as always, and I'm trying to get through as many of these as I can in the allotted time. If I don't get to your question on this show, I think I'm going to tack on somewhere later on in the week. I'll tack on another bonus Twitter Q&A with the questions I don't get to. So please be patient if you don't hear your question answered on this show. Let's see. I'm just looking through my Twitter questions. Some of these questions I've already answered on this show, which shows you guys are thinking in sync, which is good. Tova wants to know, what are your thoughts on Shermer's play calling? Like any coach, I guess he has some good ones. He has some head scratchers. I think, you know, in the Philly game, there were quite a few head scratchers. I don't like the excuse or not the excuse, the explanation about why he went away from Saquon Barkley. You know, I get it that they only ran, I think, less than 10 plays in the third quarter, but they still had the entire fourth quarter. And for him to say that, oh, you know, I wanted to give Barkley a breather, that didn't fly, you know, that didn't sit well with me because Barkley's, 23 years old. He had only touched the ball, you know, or run the ball, I think 13 times or 11 times up until that point. It, you know, you give the guy a breather when you're sitting at home, not in the playoff tournament or not when the season's going on. I mean, if the game is on the line, if your season's on the line, you get your best player in there. You don't give guys, you know, a blow. So that did not sit well with me, Tova, if I'm being honest with you. Okay, King 23 wants to know, do Gettleman and Shermer make it to year three? I think so. I think the Giants ownership likes stability. They crave stability. And I think so long as the organization and the football part of it continues to trend upward, that will come. Shermer and Gettleman will be retained. Now, you know, still to come, they're going to have to, like I said, eventually address the quarterback situation, whether it's LaLetta, Tanny, some other placeholder, whether it's Manning. They're going to have to address that at some point. Max V wants to know, being 0-4 in the division and 3-8 overall means we are realistically eliminated from the postseason. How many starts should Kyle LaLetta get? Max, going back to the other question that I was asked, I think what you will see is maybe a situation where Kyle LaLetta, gets in a game, maybe, you know, plays a half or maybe plays in relief here and there, you know, sort of like a preseason type of setup. But right now, I don't think you're going to see him. I don't think you're going to see him in games, not as long as they are still mathematically in the playoff hunt. Because as I said earlier in the show, by doing that, the Giants are basically saying to the locker room, we're giving up on the season. We're looking ahead to next year and the heck with the rest of this year. And that just goes against everything that Pat Shermer has been preaching to his players to keep that locker room from going, you know, in different directions. All right, let's see. Kelly F. wants to know, what are your thoughts on the defensive scheme or lack of one? I don't get the lack of adjustments or imagination. And then she also wants to know, do I think that if Shermer will give up the play calling next year, or will there be any other coaching changes? Kelly, I think the defensive scheme is in place. I think what they are missing, though, is an identity. You know, they talked about being a tough, relentless attacking defense. We have not seen that. And I think a big part of the reason why we have not seen it is because I don't think James Betcher has everything he needs to run the type of defense he wants. You know, I think next year, if you're looking at moves that they're going to make, I would be stunned if they don't bring in a new free safety. I would be shocked if they don't address the linebacker spot, specifically on the inside. And I think we can pretty much carve it in stone that they are going to dip into the pass rushing pool, because from what I understand, the draft class, the 2019 draft class, is shaping up to be a strong class for defenders. So, I think still a lot of changes to be made, and once Betcher has what he needs, then maybe we will see a defense that is closer to what he has envisioned. And of course, you know, health also plays into the factor. It plays into the equation. If you got guys who are banged up and you have to replace them with guys you're pulling in off the streets, that's a problem as well. So, do I think Shermer will give up the play calling? I'd be surprised if he does. He seems to like doing it. He seems to believe in himself in doing it. So I don't know that he will do that and give that up next year. Will there be other coaching changes? Possibly. I mean, I know a few weeks ago I thought maybe offensive line coach Hal Hunter might be on the bubble, so to speak. I mean, the offensive line has played a little bit better of late, but we'll see. I mean, coaches come and go. You know, sometimes they get better offers elsewhere, you know, whether it be through a promotion in the NFL, or maybe they get an opportunity to go back to the college ranks to be a head coach or a coordinator or whatever. So that remains to be seen. Okay. Big Blue 75 wants to know, any chance Giants fire Shermer at the end of the season? No. Don't see it happening. Again, it's been a rocky season, but Gettleman, I mean, to expect Dave Gettleman to fix the roster and get this team, you know, and turn it around, that was a tall expectation. It wasn't that they were, you know, one or two or maybe three players away from being competitive. Years and years of bad drafts really, really hurt this team. I mean, I can't say that enough. I know I sound like a broken record when I say that, but that's just the reality of the situation. So I think they're going to, you know, the ownership is going to give both Shermer and Gettleman at least another season, if not longer, to get this thing straightened out. And I think they will. I really do. I would be shocked if they don't get it straightened out. David R. wants to know, why do tight ends have so much success against the Giants D? Why do tight ends get free releases? Do you agree the Giants were outcoached at halftime by the Eagles? Regarding tight ends, that's been a problem, as you know, for the longest time. I think part of it has to do with the lack of free release. But another part of it is you need speed to keep up with these tight ends. And, you know, I really like what the Giants have been doing with Landon Collins. They've been moving him down into the box and having him play almost like a pseudo linebacker type of a role. And I think it's a role that's really going to suit him well if they keep him in that particular type of responsibilities. So we'll see if that helps moving forward. But you're right, it is frustrating to see tight ends run wild against the Giants defense. They do need some more speed. They need, I think, better cover guys, you know, amongst the linebackers, safeties taking better angles. And, you know, hopefully down the line, they'll get that problem straightened out. Were the Giants outcoached at halftime by the Eagles? I think the Eagles made a couple of adjustments that the Giants didn't necessarily respond to. And I will say this, there's an article that I wrote for The Athletic in which I took a look at one of the things that the Eagles did that the Giants really, I don't think, adjusted to. Won't give it away what it is, but do check it out. It should be out on the Athletic New York site today, and along with a film study that I did regarding the Giants' run defense, focusing on the defense tackles and the problems that they have been having on the Giants' run defense. So check that out. Mike D. wants to know, why would you take a successful point after touchdown off the board by missing a two-point conversion? Mike, I didn't like that call. And of course, Mike is talking about, you know, the opening touchdown on the first drive in which the Giants went for 2 points instead of kicking the point after. I didn't like that decision. I understand why Shermer did it. He felt that, you know, thanks to the penalty, they had put him on the 1 yard line. And he was basically trying to say to the offense, look, I have confidence in you to get this ball into the end zone. Didn't care for the play that was called. And just, you know, I'm of the opinion that if you're struggling to score, you don't get cute. You take the sure points. And I know there's no such thing as sure points, but I think you have a better percentage of a chance to make the point after than you do a two-point conversion. So I was a little surprised and disappointed by that, and that was part of a group of things that came back to haunt the Giants at the end of the game. Okay, a couple more questions, and it doesn't look like I'm going to get to all of these, but again, those that I don't get to, I will do another session later on this week, probably on Friday's show. All right, Texas, okay, I've answered that question about coaching changes. Okay, Adam wants to know, with Ingram's limited role, what's next for the tight end position? Adam, I think you got to look at this a little differently. Evan Ingram, in the past, was asked to do a lot of things, some of which he wasn't necessarily cut out to do. And specifically, I'm talking about blocking. He is not the best of inline blockers. You know, is he serviceable? Yes. Do you necessarily want to run a play behind him trying to block a defensive end? Probably not the best idea. So what do you do? A coach's role is to put players in the best possible position to make plays, to do well, to succeed. And by putting Ingram in there as an inline blocker, that is not taking advantage of what he does best. So, you know, what do? They have Red Ellison, they have Scott Simonson do the dirty work, and then they save Ingram to do, you know, what he does best, which is run patterns and catch passes. Now, we'll see what happens regarding Ingram's hamstring strain. It does sound like he's going to be week to week. So it might be a moot point for the rest of the year, but certainly something to keep an eye on. But I think next year is going to be a big year, a make or break season for Ingram, who, you know, let's face it, this year between the production, the drops, the injuries, this year was just not a good year for the second year player. We'll do one more question and then we'll call it a show. And again, if your question was not answered on this show, make sure you tune in later this week. And I'll get to the rest of them. Which offensive lineman should be back starting next year for the Giants? And that comes from Ernest D. I think, Ernest, you're going to see Nate Solder back. You will see Will Hernandez. I think they're going to do what they can to sign Jamon Brown. At center, I have a feeling they might look to bring another guy in. I mean, it really depends on where John Jalapio is in his recovery. And if they think he is the long-term answer, I would not be surprised if they add another center to the mix. I think John Greco will retire or move on. Spencer Pulley, I think, will be back in a depth role. And I think at right tackle, the Giants are going to look to upgrade that spot. Chad Wheeler hasn't been horrible of late, but I think the Giants want to try and get better. And I think a name you want to watch for because of the Carolina-Gettleman connection is Darrell Williams. He's currently dealing with a knee injury, but I think he's a guy who I have just a gut feeling that Gettleman's going to make a pitch for, a guy that maybe the Giants can get at a reasonable price if they can't land, you know, a prospect in the draft. I think, you know, this year's draft, or I should say 2019's draft, you're going to probably see a lot of instances where the Giants dip in and restock the defensive side of the ball. So that's how I see that playing out. Okay. I'll squeeze in one last question only because this is game related to the Eagles. Wants to know about the officiating. Jennifer L. asks about the officiating. And I think there was another, Howard M. also wanted to know about the officiating in the Eagles game. And look, you know, here's the bottom line. Yes, there were calls that were missed, both good and bad, and on both teams, you know. I never want to say that the officiating affects the outcome of the game. The only time in my memory that the officiating affected maybe the outcome of the game is, you know, that San Francisco 49er game where they missed on Rich Seibert. They had a pass interference call that they missed. You know, that was the famous Trey Junkin botched snap one. But still, look, the Giants were up 19-3 at one point in the game. They let the Eagles back in. That is not on the officiating guys. That is on the Giants. So, you know, were there bad calls made? Yes. Were there missed calls made? Absolutely. But I think it happened for both sides. And I just, you know, I'm sorry. I can't use that as an excuse. You know, the officials are human. They are enforcing the rules as indicated, as written and developed by the owners and the competition committee. Some officiating crews are going to be more flag happy than others, but you know, the bottom line is if you play fundamentally sound football and you play smart football, the officiating shouldn't have an outcome either way. And the Giants this season haven't always done that, and it's unfortunate, but such is life. All right, Giant fans, I want to thank you again for all the questions. And again, I got a ton of them. I mean, these are awesome questions. Still a lot more I can answer, and I'll try and answer them again on Friday's show. Speaking of which, Friday's show, I'm hoping to do a draft-related show for you guys. I know a lot of you keep asking me about the draft, so I'm looking to do something in that respect. So on that note, I want to thank you again for the questions. I want to thank you for tuning in. Thanks to everybody. I mean, the show has been doing really well, and I appreciate you for taking time out to listen to me on a daily basis. And do keep those questions coming. And we'll talk to you again soon. Patricia Traina, Locked On Giants, signing out.